Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Hello, everyone. I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense.
And I'm Amy Scott, filling in for Kai Rizdahl today. Thanks so much for joining us. It's Wednesday, May 8th, and you know the drill. Today we're going to do some news, then some smiles, and as Kai says, well, get out of your hair.
Yes. I actually have two news items. The first one is sort of following up to the conversation we were having yesterday about, you know, things getting a little bit easier on the consumer debt side of things and whether or not people were carrying as much debt as, you know, they used to be. And then I saw after the show this interesting article in Bloomberg about buy now, pay later loans and how there is not much transparency around these sort of short-term loans, you think like Affirm and Klarna and Afterpay, those sorts of things. And because we don't have as much transparency around loans like that as we do with some other types of debt, it's making it more difficult to get a full picture of what the consumer debt landscape looks like right now. And so here in this article, it says, time and again, these companies have resisted calls for greater disclosure, even as the market has grown each year since at least 2020 and is projected to reach almost $700 billion globally by 2028. That's masking a complete picture of the financial health of American households, which is crucial for everyone from global central banks to U.S. regional lenders and multinational business. Businesses. Consumer spending in the world's largest economy has been so resilient in the face of stubbornly high inflation that economists and traders have had to repeatedly rip up their forecasts for slowing growth and interest rate cuts. Still, cracks are starting to form. First, it was Americans falling behind on auto loans. Then credit card delinquency rates reached the highest since at least 2012, with a share of debt 30, 60, and 90 days late all on the upswing. And there are signs that consumers are struggling to afford their buy now, pay later debt, too. A recent survey conducted for Bloomberg News by Harris Poll found that 43% of those who owe money to BNPL services said they were behind on payments.
Wow.
So.
And, you know, we were talking about how Gen Z has higher credit card balances than millennials did a decade ago. I wonder if they're also more likely to be using these buy now, pay later services, which wouldn't be showing up in that data. That's really interesting.
It is. So the other news item is related to sort of this rush of policymaking that's happening out of the Biden administration in the last couple of weeks. And some of it is regulations, and they're trying to get ahead of, you know, the Congressional Review Act, which we discussed on the show a couple weeks ago. But Politico has a really cool interactive piece today, looking at not just the policies they're trying to get out the door, but the money they are trying to get out the door. And you put together the Inflation Reduction Act, the American Rescue Plan, the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, and the CHIPS and Science Act all together. I'm going to read here from the Politico Playbook newsletter. Between them, they contain $1.6 trillion in loans, grants, and tax credits meant to green the economy, revive the country's manufacturing base, and repair its roads and bridges and challenge China for technological supremacy. And so they are trying to get hundreds of billions of dollars that have been approved by Congress out the door so that if Trump wins in November, the money isn't left over for Trump to spend the way that he wants to or to cancel it. And they broke down, and they've got some really cool graphics showing this, of the $1.1 trillion those four laws provided for direct investments on climate, energy, and infrastructure, less than 17% has been spent as of April. When it comes to the American Rescue Plan, of the $884 billion, only $125 billion has been spent. Of the $54 billion from the CHIPS Act, less than $700 million has been awarded, although the Commerce Department has announced $29 billion in tentative awards. So, you know, that is, it'll be very interesting to see how the Biden administration tries to get the rest of this money out the door and what would what may happen if Trump wins and some of these funds have not been allocated yet.
Well, you also wonder, like, it seems like trying to spend money really fast could lead to a lot of problems.
Well, yeah, remember the Paycheck Protection Program.
Right. Yeah. I mean, what's the knock-on effect of the rush? I wonder if we'll be seeing that for several years to come.
Well, I've asked folks at the Commerce Department about sort of the speed of getting this money out the door, and they pointed out that they took a long time to start awarding the money, mm-hmm. and the reason that it's all kind of, it seems like you're hearing an announcement about some new factory or some new award every week now is because they spent a lot of time on the run-up to it, making sure they had the vetting in place and the systems in place. And now they say they're in a position to very quickly now make decisions and actually allocate the funds. So I imagine we're going to see a lot more of this coming up. But
right.
Highly recommend the Politico Interactive. What you got?
All right. Well, a very sad story, but I promise I have a good smile later. So bear with me. I read this on Axios, but it's about a study published today in JAMA Psychiatry. We were talking about words we've only read.
I think it's JAMA.
Yeah. Journal of the American Medical Association, their psychiatry journal. And this study showed that between 2011 and 2021, more than 320,000 children in this country lost a parent to a drug overdose. And over that decade, the rate of children losing a parent more than doubled. As often happens with these things, there were significant disparities across racial and ethnic groups. Children of American Indian and Alaska Native parents had the highest rate of loss, 187 per 100,000 children, which is just really staggering. That's more than double the rate of white and black children losing parents to overdose. But black children experienced the highest increase in the loss over the decade. Most of these deaths did involve opioids, and it really just speaks to the huge cost of this ongoing epidemic. That really stood out to me because the loss of any individual is, of course, tragic. But when you think about children and the trauma they're going to carry forward into the next generation, it's just really sobering.
Yeah, I'm trying to get this term. So there's a term called ACEs, Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all this research showing that when children are exposed to traumatic events, it has these knock-on effects on their health, their education, their outcomes, their risk of incarceration, and all sorts of other things. And, you know, these adverse childhood experiences of trauma have generational consequences. So when we're talking about a kid losing their parent to an overdose, you have to also imagine that that is going to leave a lasting damage on that kid. And we don't necessarily have the mental health infrastructure or even, you know, the care infrastructure when it comes to the foster care system to give these kids what they need.
Yep.
Yep, definitely need the smiles now.
Yeah. Yours looks fun. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, did you watch any of the Met Gala?
Or no.
The red carpet for the Met Gala?
I've looked at some pictures, but no, I didn't watch.
Yeah, I didn't watch it live either. I don't have the time for it, but I always like to go back and look at the pictures of the gowns. And, you know, they're so beautiful, but they're all often very complicated and difficult.
Very
it seems,
uncomfortable looking.
to move in. And, you know, sometimes you're looking at those dresses and you're like, how do you move in them? And it turns out, in large part, you do not.
So, yeah. I'm always like, how do you pee? Like, can you go to the bathroom? Nope.
Right. And so there's a South African singer named Tyla who really is being discussed as having one of the best looks of the night, her hourglass-themed, sand-themed dress, you know, evoking sort of the sands of time by a designer whose name I'm probably mispronouncing, Balmain. And it's her first time at the Met Gala, and the gown was just beautiful. It fit her wonderfully and everything, but she could not move in it. And so she got to the stairs and couldn't go up the stairs in the gown. And so there's video of her literally being carried up the stairs and not like swept up into someone's arms and carried. Like the dude is lifting
like
her
awkwardly
by her waist and carrying her up the stairs as her feet are kind of like hovering
like,
over
like you
it.
Would carry a child who's pretending to be paralyzed to avoid going to bed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, that was specific. Don't have that experience, but I bet every parent
we can all
knows
imagine
what you're talking
it. Yes.
about. Yes. And so that's funny. And then, but what made me even pay attention to the movement in this dress was because I came across this video online of her after she made it up the stairs and into the event. In order to be able to sit down, they cut the bottom half of the dress off.
Did anyone like think this through?
It was a plan. It was a plan.
Oh.
And so there's this astonishing video of the designer, like, on his knees with a pair of scissors freehanding a cut across this gown. And it comes out and it's like this adorable little mini dress. And then she's just, like, cute the rest of the night.
I feel like we need to play some sound of this. Can we mix that in post? It's just too good.
Well, it doesn't make much sound. It's just like he's sitting there cutting, and he cuts this like perfectly straight line around the dress while she's wearing it. And, you know, then it's a whole other outfit. And I just, the skill, wow. But it was cute.
Or
it was
something.
Cute before, it was
yeah.
cute afterwards. But it also kind of hurts your heart to see such a beautiful gown, like, just chopped.
Get
but,
cut.
I imagine they'll
repurpose
the fabric.
But because it's made of sand, I'm looking at these pictures.
It's not
it doesn't
made
even
of
really
sand. It has three
like
kinds of
gown.
Sand on it. It has three kinds of sand on it. On
okay,
the fabric.
Okay.
But
wow.
the instead of a purse, she had like a very pretty little hourglass hand thing that was really adorable. Anyway. That's my smile. What's
yours?
That
is artistry. Okay. Well, mine is, I saw it in the Baltimore Banner, which is the nonprofit news site here, by one of my favorite reporters, Tim Prudente, and Stokely Baksh. I hope I'm saying that right. I don't know Stokely's work that well. But anyway, a story about a woman in Baltimore who was renovating her bathroom in an old historic neighborhood, like the house is from 1910 or something. And she found a trove of love letters in the plumbing in this little box. And the letters are from the 1920s. There were dozens of them. And I don't want to tell you too much because she ends up turning over the letters to reporters at the Banner and it leads them on this, you know, investigation to figure out who exactly they were from. It involves, quote, a celebrated Johns Hopkins scientist, a famous mountaineer, and a trailblazing female journalist. There's an illicit affair involved. It's just a super fun story and shows you never know what you will find if you open the walls of your house.
Wow. I wonder how hard it was to find someone who could actually read cursive.
That's part of it. The woman who owns the house got so tired of reading this hard to read cursive that she was like, I want to know, but I give up. And thus I turned it over to reporters. Apparently there was a whole team who would stop by the table and try to make out a different section. And people wrote different back then.
Yes.
And the language was different, too, which is interesting. A lot of old fashioned,
yeah.
But very, very poetic letters, I must say.
What I love, though, is that the lines on the paper that they use, it's like the same from when we were in elementary school, like with the blue lines and the red line on the side. It's those, a lot of it is similar paper to that. Wow. This is so fascinating. I'm going to have to go back and read this. This is cool, Amy.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yay, history. All right, that is it for us today. I will be back with Sabri Benishore tomorrow. Until then, send us your thoughts, questions, comments, or any audio you think we should talk about to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can leave us a voicemail at 508-UBSMART.
Make Me Smart is produced by Courtney Bergseeker. Ellen Rolfes writes our newsletter. Today's program was engineered by Jay Siebold. Talia Menchaca is our intern.
Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Our senior producer is Marissa Cabrera. Bridget Bodner is the director of podcasts, and Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.